The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra.
It's a special seditious edition of Football Weekly Extra with Dr. Lowe in the house as we round up all the lucky nations who are going to the World Cup. Nation goes bananas as Roy's boys reverse the poles and get the monkey off their back at Wembley. Elsewhere, we salute the Icelanders, the Bosnians, and the Americans too, and ask, whatever happened to Remember the Alamo? Plus, we look forward to the return of club football this weekend. Man United not going to Rio after his recent problems and Southampton arriving in town. Man City taking on team of the moment West Ham, and Morrison, can he unravel them? And much, much more as we round up your posts and tweets in today's Football Weekly Extra. A moment to savour this, listeners, because here before me, Sean Ingle, the Podfather.
Hello.
Hi, Sean. Dr. Lowe in the house.
Hello, Jimbo.
And Amy Lawrence, the woman. Extraordinary.
You keep that in, Producer Ben.
Yeah. Crikey. We've ticked all the boxes there, haven't we?
That's your Roy Hodgson moment.
Your Agent Charles moment.
Right. Sean, you're especially excited because this group of people hasn't been together in the same room since...
I think it's a Stadio dell'Alpi on March 9, 2005.
Great times.
It was a fantastic game. We were just talking about it before we came in. Juventus played Real Madrid and it went to extra time and Juventus won through 2 on aggregate with a 116th minute winner.
Zabaleta, 2005. Anyway, 2014. It's pretty much settled. Obviously, there's playoffs. We'll talk about them a bit more. But some very exciting performances around the globe. Big game in London, of course. Don't know if you went along. Craven Cottage. Australia scoring after 26 seconds. This was amazing. They beat Australia coming off two consecutive defeats in which they'd scored none and conceded 12. They took on Canada. How bad must Canada be? One listener was asking. They conceded to Australia after 26 seconds. Amazing, isn't it? There was, of course, another game going on Tuesday night. Everyone will be relieved to hear. England taking on Poland at Wembley. Sean, what do you think?
Well, I had that sort of strange sensation. I mean, I'm speaking to someone who doesn't, you know, have a Three Lions tattoo or wear Union Jack underpants, but I was generally thought the game was thrilling and exciting, particularly the first 60 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, I was very impressed with England. Admittedly, you know, the Poland away from home are shocking. You know, they've been San Marino a couple of times and not much else in the last few years. But England really went at them and they thoroughly deserved their win.
Of course, they came out really fired up for that second half after Roy's halftime team talk.
Are we going to talk about this?
Well, it's an unusual team talk. It's caught a controversy because it featured the word monkey, and apparently Roy then had to apologise to Andros Townsend. Well, I wasn't talking about you when I said monkey. But the big question, as Sean Roberts asks, who does the pod think leaked Roy's space monkey joke, and to what end?
Well, I think we have to be careful here legally, but I think that's a big question. I would be looking at whether is it deliberate? Did perhaps the player tell... another teammate who then might have then either told his agent, who would have passed on to newspapers.
Presumably the joke being so funny that he just had to share it with his friends after.
Also bizarre. I mean, that seems to me to be more likely, doesn't it? That a player says, Roy told this really weird story about a monkey in space. And then perhaps someone... Yeah, the other possibility is, of course, that someone then runs with that because for whatever reason they think it's striking. It seems to me to be a bit of a nonsense, a bit of a weird story as well.
Well, it is a weird story, but it's also weird that Roy felt moved to apologise to Townsend, as he himself admits.
This is my query of this, is if he felt moved to apologise, is it because he thinks somehow, oops, hang on, this might be interpreted as, or has someone said to him, well, hang on a minute, boss, you can't say that.
But whatever, it must have been a pretty weird half-time moment.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first weird halftime moment, but it must have been pretty weird, yeah.
It wouldn't catch Finn coming out with anything like that. Good. Well, listen, did it help you make up your mind about some of the long-running debates, re-England players? Michael Carrick, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I think, when you saw Gerrard and Lampard in earlier games together, you can't help but let go of this sort of age-old doubt about whether that's always going to be resigned into a weird place of history, that an experiment that was persisted with for so long.
And right.
I think the balance with Carrick was so much better.
Right, okay.
I think there's still going to be a question mark about when you're playing some of the more aggressive teams, whether there's enough in that midfield, because it is the area where England tend to get overrun against the best teams.
Mm.
So I think in the looking long term at possible knockouts of a World Cup, if England get that far, which has been that stepping stone too far in the past, that would be the question where I think, would that be enough at this point? But for now, for qualification and for certainly going into to a group phase, you'd have to think that that looks like a better
balance. Who would you bring in then when you get to the meatier games?
Well, I don't know whether it's who you bring in or whether it's more of a strategic thing. Because if you know, there's certain international teams who pack their midfield out more, and that's where there's the danger of people getting overrun, I think, when you just play with two.
For example, Germany's up next, friendly in November. And that's exactly the kind of team who are monstrously strong in midfield. Could be an exciting evening that for Carrick. Were you thumbs up, thumbs down, Carrick?
He played well. I thought, as Amy said, the balance was much better. I guess there is a question mark about who'd you play alongside him. Do England have the energy, particularly in those hot days in Brazil? You want someone that perhaps can really push and drive and keep things going together. And while he's a wonderful passer, sometimes there's a criticism about how he plays there.
Is there an argument though that says, let's completely reframe this, that rather than talking about strong people and people who can drive, maybe we should talk about people who can keep hold of the ball for a little bit, because that's been one of England's
problems. But Carrick can do that.
Carrick can do it, and I think actually the value of Carrick, and I say this as someone who obviously for obvious reasons doesn't get to see as many England games as perhaps I'd like, or maybe not like, as perhaps I should.
Mm-hmm.
But the other night I was really impressed by him. But perhaps Carrick's impact was probably shown by the fact that England lost control when he went off rather than gained it.
Right, interesting point.
Then you came back to Gerrard and Lampard again, and you think that this doesn't work. But I think there is an argument that says, how about we try and keep the ball a bit rather than necessarily worrying about people who can bomb on or people who are energetic? And because the reality may well be in Brazil that games aren't energetic; they're not open.
Well, they are if you play Andros Townsend and the whole.
Oh, that's an energetic player on the pitch, not necessarily an energetic game. It depends how you use him. But yeah, he stretches the whole game and opens. Right.
But isn't that what brought the best out of England? Yeah, isn't definitely that where the argument might be? If you're going to change something in midfield, you'd look at either a Wilshere, who has been playing a more sort of defensive midfield role for England rather than the number 10 he was supposed to be originally, or Ross Barkley. And obviously it's massively early days to talk about a player who's not been capped yet at England level, but when you look at the impact Townsend has had over two games, there's no reason to assume that a player like Barkley, who's come through and shown that kind of drive, and exactly, you're talking about playing to your strengths, and if you want England to play a possession game, are they playing to their strengths?
Well, I think this is one of the problems that we kind of get obsessed with changing everything sometimes, rather than worrying about, okay, well, let's maybe not so much change everything as look at it and decide what it is we can do, what it is we have to do that we don't do. And I personally still think that what we have
tackle,
to do is keep the ball better than we do.
Right.
But if that's not
if we
what
have
England
the ball,
do,
how are we going to tackle the opposition? And that's where our strength lies.
Well, in which case there's a genuine point there. I know you're being facetious, but there is a genuine point there, which is if your strength is tackle and move tackle and burst from there, then you allow teams to come to you to some extent, and you look to rob and break from that rather than to construct from deeper.
Right.
We're sort of going back to sort of Malcolm Gladwell's theory here, when David's tackle Goliaths. The strategy of a David shouldn't be to do the same thing a Goliath would do. It's to sort of, you change your tactics liberally. So,
Sean, are you calling England a David in a world of Goliaths?
If you're up against a Spain or you're up against whatever, an Italy, you're not going to perhaps beat them playing a possession game necessarily.
All right. Well, there are some other players I want to know what to think about. Welbeck here, who was it, tweeted, if you dropped a horse out of a plane, it would still be more in control of its limbs than Welbeck. It's a popular theory, and others say if he gets fielded by all these top managers, it's because he performs a vital role for the team, even if it doesn't involve putting the ball in the back of the net, as we saw on Tuesday.
Well, he has scored goals for England, so I don't think it's a case of looking at him and saying, well, that there's a disaster. And he has scored goals for England in the past, and I think he can do again. But I'm not sure that playing him in that position seemed to be quite the dream scenario for him. And there was that obvious comparison to be made. There was so much good effect that you got from Townsend on the equivalent position on the right that it's obvious that someone who's perhaps not quite so having the same impact on the left people are going to point the finger. But I also think that you can't always necessarily play a team with two out-and-out wingers that way. Mm. You might have to have a sort of different style from one side to the other.
Particularly if you've got Baines behind him. Mm. So if the creativity is coming from the guy behind, then the left-sided midfielder, in theory, comes inside a little bit more and adds the players inside rather than on the outside.
But that's such an interesting one in itself, because the whole Baines-Cole conundrum is now absolutely on a knife edge.
Do you not just move Baines into midfield and have Cole at left?
Well, maybe you do.
But that makes the assumption that he's the same player midfield. And as you will probably know from the experience of Roberto Carlos at Inter Milan, it doesn't work like that. Because sometimes the value of an attacking fullback is precisely the fact that he arrives on the run and he's coming from deeper and he's watching the game unravel in front of him and therefore sees the space rather than is standing there surrounded by it and unable to see it.
Right.
I totally get that, but is it not worth a try at one point?
It might be worth a try. The other thing is, by the way, let me just speak.
I just want to use the segue. Speaking of unravelling, Chris Worrell says, who can the pod see sneaking into Hodgson's World Cup squad who hasn't yet made a mark? And
well, you said unravelling, so I assume you're looking at Morrison.
Yeah, he certainly made a mark on Wilfried Zaha, didn't he, in that under-21 game?
He certainly did, and that's about as far as my knowledge of him goes, I'm afraid.
Right, well, everyone very excited about him. Supposedly, he's got his head together. And that terrific run for West Ham and goal against Spurs in the last round in the Premier League and a big part in the under-21s. Big 5-0 defeat of Lithuania. Ooh, Gareth Southgate, what a terrific job he seems to be doing with the under-21s. Is that someone who you think could be coming in, or is that character issue still...
There's a danger of picking a player or hailing a player after a couple of decent games.
Townsend proves the worth of doing that.
Well, possibly, although even him, I mean, look at Raheem Sterling this time last season. We were all raving about him and he's dropped off a bit. Now, I've been obviously really impressed with Andros Townsend so far this season, but I'd like to, again, it wouldn't be surprising if he had a dip, given that, you know, he was at Leeds on loan, didn't really rip up any trees. You know, and even at QPR last season, he played well, but he wasn't outstanding. So it wouldn't necessarily be a shock if he dipped. And another thing to say about Townsend, in the two games recently, he's been up against players that wouldn't be Premier League quality.
Right.
And, you know, while it's fantastic, he played superbly well, no nerves on debut, etc. You know, there's still a question mark over, you know, how brilliant he will be long term.
Right. There's a slightly Forrest Gump element about him, isn't it? Isn't there? You know, you have to hold up the sign saying "Stop, Forrest, stop." No, nobody else feel that when you see Andros Townsend
think,
go off.
Well, I think the other thing is that was Sean saying that it depends what team you play against. It depends what kind of team you play against as well. Players whose fundamental quality is that they're extremely quick and they go at people and they run into the space behind defences.
Right.
They come up against a defence that doesn't give you any space behind. You've got nowhere to run to, and then you get to this Forrest Gump thing, which is you say, okay, so what's your next move if you haven't got this? And his fundamental move is run down the left, cut inside, and shoot.
Mm.
Not only, but fundamental. And very briefly, to make the point I was going to make earlier about Danny Welbeck, I think actually one of the problems is we look at Welbeck in terms of, I think Amy used the word obvious, and I think that's the point. The problem with Welbeck is, I know this sounds ridiculous, but what he brings to a team isn't obvious, and I think that counts against him. I think he's actually a much better player than the just kind of the headline
the show, right,
highlights okay. suggest.
All right, interesting.
Because I think he's bright, basically.
Right.
I think there's another one to throw in, which is Walcott, because obviously he wasn't available because he wasn't fit, but you're looking at potentially Townsend and Walcott competing for a position.
Mm.
And I think one of the things that, again, you're taking into account the perhaps quality of the opponent, but where there was a difference is that Townsend seemed to be more involved. You know, Walcott does have a tendency to drift in and out of games, and there are times when he might come up with something special, but he can be quite invisible for quite a long period of a match. So that's another interesting thing that
Townsend,
will be analysed.
And
no
Janusay,
doubt.
Of course, down the line, because, you know, similar.
I'll be back on that.
Yeah. All right, well, that's England. Well done to Roy Hodgson, who's still yet to lose a competitive match with, apart from the one on penalties with Italy, with England, and through they go. And they're going to be in pot two at the World Cup. That's the news this Thursday morning, so that's quite exciting.
Are you putting some AC Jimbo Euros on England going all the way?
No, I won't be, Sean. No, I won't. But I'd be interested to hear where your very carefully calculated tips would be lying.
Too early to say. I mean, England at the 25-1, which is applied odds of 3.85%. And I think...
What does that mean?
They have a roughly 4% chance of winning it.
But we all know they have a no percent chance of winning it.
No, that's not. That's simply not true, is it?
I mean, no one thought Greece at 100-1.
It simply is, actually.
But no one thought Greece at 100-1 could you know, win the Euros in 2004. I mean, England have a chance. It's how you define that chance.
Fair enough, yeah. Okay.
They have a ticket for the lottery. They do. Anyway, that's it for part one. That's enough England chat. Don't worry, listeners, we're getting on to other teams after this. Big World O Football, and England's next opponents, as we mentioned, are Germany in a friendly. Crikey, they had a bit of a match the other day, didn't they? You remember that time when they hosted Sweden and were 4-0 up at half-time, and then it came back with 4-4, and there was much soul-searching in the German press. This time they were away to Sweden, and they went 2-0 down, but they came back, and they won it 5-3 in the end, with hat-trick from Shirley, the forgotten man of Stamford Bridge.
Indeed, but I mean Germany are fascinating because, you know, from their midfield and forward line, I mean they reminded me a bit of Arsenal 2 or 3 years ago when Arsenal were a bit leaky, but you know they played wonderfully well. Could you trust them at the World Cup in 2014? You know, they probably rampaged through the group, but then the fear that they'd encounter another team like Italy, you know, at the Euros, and even though dominating, then perhaps lose to a couple of counter attack goals. I mean,
were all their forwards are currently injured or very old?
I mean, but Schürrle can play up front. And yeah, okay. He's not old.
All right, well, there you go. I'm completely wrong.
Gomez isn't that old.
He's pretty old.
I mean, I must confess, I didn't see the game, but didn't they play with a false number nine the other
day?
Did
they?
I believe so.
I think. All right. Ozil got injured. Any news on that, Amy?
There seems to be mixed reports, but he went down clutching his knee pointed at his knee and got withdrawn straight away. Went down the tunnel for treatment, but. I think
he was flown straight back to be examined by Arsenal doctors. Is that right? Because big games coming up. Of course, Borussia Dortmund, and before that, Norwich.
That's right. Yeah. But the good news for Arsenal is they have got Santi Cazorla coming back this weekend. So if Ozil doesn't quite make it, they can compensate in a rather nice way.
Okay. Very nice. Very nice. Anyway, Germany, blah, 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 top group, etc. And Sweden go into the playoffs. As do Iceland. They did it. They got their draw away to Norway.
Although they didn't need to, because obviously Switzerland beat Slovenia. But still,
obviously.
No, I mean, and I think they're unbeaten in 5 matches now. They're going to be in the weaker pot, so they're going to draw against a big side. But it's wonderful to see a side who are, you know, wherever they were seeded in the qualifiers.
I wonder what the odds were when back then of them getting to a World Cup playoff.
I didn't even check, to be honest.
Right.
Slack.
Well, all this with just 19,999 players in Iceland. I would have said 20,000, but they lost one to America, Aaron Johansson, who proved crucial, as we'll discover later on. And
I think what's great is that you're talking about a country where obviously they can't play outdoor football most of the time. So their work with youth players is largely indoor football.
Underground, I think.
But, you know, the bottom line is that they've had to overcome obstacles that are different to most of the other countries in qualifications.
I wonder if that's helped them in a crazy way. In a crazy way. They just want it that much more, perhaps. How about Bosnia and Herzegovina?
How about them?
How about them? They're a crazy team. I'm looking forward to seeing them at the World Cup. Goals galore. No? Sean, you excited by them?
Absolutely.
Pjanic. Dzeko. I'm going to say some other names that
go
you
on,
know.
Go on, more.
Begovic. But no, he doesn't score goals, says producer Ben. That's fair enough, though. But they do have a very interesting approach. And when you're looking at an incredible narrative, the disaster that they had before, the threat of them being excluded from international competition, and the way they've had to basically refound their federation and all that.
Well, more seriously, just the civil war, not more than a couple of decades ago, and the fact they are the only ones out of the former Yugoslavian teams through. I know Croatia could still well qualify. It's an amazing achievement, I think.
Yeah. Only Germany, Holland and a team called England have scored more in these qualifiers than Bosnia-Herzegovina.
It's interesting that you put England in there. I think...
Well, I don't...
No, you don't. It's true. Right. But obviously, you know, we have this tendency to think, it's all rubbish, but actually it's not.
I mean,
is
there a case to be made that there isn't really an outstanding team in world football at the moment? I mean, I'm sure we're going to come on to Spain in a second, but Spain have been the outstanding team since 2008. There are question marks about them. There are certainly question marks about Brazil with handling the pressure. Argentina obviously have some wonderful attacking players, still a little bit concerned about them.
They're getting Messi right now, and this assumption that was always thrown at Messi that he doesn't do it at an international level is becoming less and less plausible to throw that at them. And the other thing, I suppose, maybe say, is there are no outstanding international teams. That kind of gets defined by the tournaments itself, so it's always quite difficult, isn't it, between tournaments to say, right, well, who's outstanding? But you're right in terms of Spain not being, you know, quite as dominant as, or not appearing to be quite as dominant as they were. Brazil, I suppose, of course there's doubts about Brazil because they're not playing any competitive games either, although they were quite good at the Confederations.
They certainly were. Belgium had, they were knocked off their pedestal by Wales, of course, midweek. Was that Craig Bellamy's farewell?
Yes.
Dave Farrer is a deity, is a listener's name, says, I hope the pub will do a bit of genuflecting towards Craig Bellamy on Thursday with knees creakier than an Emmerdale plot. He's shown a level of commitment to Wales that a fair number of the current squad would do well to follow.
Let's creak our knees because I think he's brilliant.
Yeah.
What he does, for good or bad, is genuine, and it's not. There's no posing with him. There's no pretense. He is what he is. At times difficult. At times, I imagine, a pretty horrible person to play with, or to manage. But there's something. Yeah, there's something genuine about him. There's something kind of you almost imagine that when he retires, one day you'll go down the park on a Sunday and he'll be playing a Sunday league game just because. Yeah. Because he can.
That's all well and good, but what about Scotland? What about Scotland?
Woof.
Woof, eh? Oh, sure, you're frowning, but the 2-0 against Croatia. All right, Croatia are having a rotten series of results and they fired their manager after because the players can't bear it.
I think it's really difficult to make too many assumptions, you know, with Wales, with Scotland, when you're playing a team that hasn't really got much to play for.
Right.
You know, I mean, Northern Ireland, great result in Israel, but, you know, Israel, again, had nothing to play for. So, you know, well done to all of them for not losing. And yeah. Well done to Republic Ireland for winning as well. But actually...
What are the odds?
I think you can't extrapolate.
Right, playoffs. They're coming up in November. Greece, Croatia, Portugal, Ukraine are seeded. France, Sweden, Romania, Iceland aren't. I know there's a reason for this. It's a bit messed up and that, but those are the games anyway. And that'll be coming up in November. We'll be rooting for Iceland.
I thought there was an interesting comment from the French Federation, who I think brought a complaint to FIFA about this, which I can understand, although France and playoffs having complaints, some people might have their comments about that. Mm. But they were saying because they were in the smaller group, because they were in the group where they had fewer matches, then they didn't have as much chance to rack up some FIFA points by getting a nice, easy couple of wins against a potentially low-rank opponent.
Yeah, because friendlies don't count as much.
No.
Right. So they're 6-0 against Australia.
There is seeding. Correct me if I'm wrong, and it's possible I'm wrong. I think I remember that...
We may be losing the listeners.
Six or eight years ago, went into the playoffs and they said there will be no seeding. And then suddenly they realised they had Spain and Portugal and some other really good strong... Yeah, let's put some seeding in it. Piss off. If they haven't earned the right to be seeded. They couldn't get through their group.
Right. Strong language. But I think it justified by the subject matter there. If you can't get upset about World Cup playoff seedings, then...
What can you possibly get upset about? That's all the stuff that gets cut out.
Yeah, well... Quick roundup of any other international stories you want to mention. Ghana destroying Egypt. Wow.
You've got to feel a little bit sorry for the Egyptians, because didn't they, in their qualifying games, they didn't lose a game, won them all.
Yeah.
And yet, of course, then you end up being drawn against Ghana, the best side in Africa.
Yeah.
It's a little bit unfair.
They have some seedings there, couldn't they?
Well, but then you look at Mexico, I think have won two of their 10 qualifying games.
Right.
And they're going to the World Cup. I do feel a bit sorry for the Egyptians.
Have they not got to beat New Zealand?
Don't do the walk like an Egyptian joke.
I wasn't
going to.
Producer Ben came up with something even worse. He said it's not Pharaoh.
I personally think it's time the Egyptians faced up to the facts, because at the moment they appear to be in denial.
Sid Lowe wins the internet. Absolutely. Mexico do have to play New Zealand. And New Zealand, who I believe... just drew with Trinidad and Tobago in their most recent match. But talking of Mexico, we can't not talk about this. Costa Rica retrocede, balón de Estados Unidos, tres cuartos de cancha. Atención con el centro, Estados Unidos, gol! 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 Gol de Estados Unidos! We love you! We love you forever and ever! God bless America, doctor. Estados Unidos nos mete la reclasificación. Estados Unidos, ustedes no. Yeah, TBS Tech's announcer Christian Martinoli going bonkers, as one listener put it. Amazing, amazing stuff there. And poor old Panama, or they shot themselves in the foot. They did it to themselves, didn't they, really? They were leading at home to USA, going into time added on. And then USA come back and they bombed down the other, and they got four men in the USA penalty box, and the USA come back and hit them twice on the break in injury time. They go out of the World Cup playoffs, and Mexico, who lost to Costa Rica, suddenly find themselves back in the picture, but the nation still hate them.
But they're grateful to America, which is
they're grateful to America. Yeah. special roundup of those Thank You America headlines and the special sweary Panama headlines in Friday's paper review. Crikey, that was an amazing bit of those final minutes of that game. Incredible. And the Panama players all in tears, and Deli Valdez saying it's all my fault. Put this death on me.
I love Deli Valdez.
You do?
Yeah, he's brilliant. Every time you hear him talk, he's fantastic.
He's still looking pretty trim, isn't he?
Yeah, he looks really well.
Really well, yeah. Okay, how's Spain doing, Sid?
Well, they qualified.
Yeah.
The last two games, they needed 4 points from them. They won them both. There's still a question mark over why they're not scoring more goals. And, of course, the reality is because they're confronted by teams who sit and wait for them. And it's much, much harder to score goals. And speaking to Iniesta about this, well, at least it means that they don't. The other teams don't attack us.
Right.
You know, so it may well be that it takes... We maybe don't get the goal till the 75th, 80th minute or something like that. But if the other team aren't attacking us, they're not going to score either. And so it does end up kind of spiralling down to something that becomes a little bit less exciting than
they
it
need
should
an
be.
Andros Townsend. That's, are they evolving?
Well, they have that. That's what Jesus Navas is for, really, to some extent.
Okay.
Are they evolving?
Are they in the same way that, say, Barcelona supposedly are now?
Yeah, well, that's actually precisely the question that I put to Andres Iniesta. Apologies, I know you raised your eyebrows last time I mentioned him, but he was on the radio with us a couple of nights ago. And saying Barcelona are evolving precisely to try and be a little bit less predictable, to try and somehow force the other team out to them, to try and create those spaces. Do Spain need to do the same? And Iniesta's point was that doesn't really depend on us. However much we evolve, if the other team simply sits and waits, there's very, very little we can do.
Is there not a suggestion that without Carlos Puyol, there are a few more question marks about the back four, therefore...
Definitely.
You know that one breakaway, that is perhaps a little bit more likely to succeed than maybe 4 or 6 years ago.
Well, it's just too. I mean, with Spain, less so, more with Barcelona. But you know, look at Barcelona at the back, and you think it only takes one corner for Barcelona to concede a goal, and they can take 35 shots, and the other team take one, and you sort of feel that might be a 1-1 draw, and that's partly a problem that Spain faced, but lesser than Barcelona. Spain are a little bit more reinforced than Barcelona are.
Might this be sort of the end of the cycle?
Because well, look at the ages. There's a belief that post-Brazil might be the end of the cycle. And perhaps, I think, a slight reluctance to look at, well, maybe it might be pre-Brazil that's the end of the cycle because of the age of some of the players, because of the fact that we're looking at Xavi Hernandez, who doesn't look the same. Xavi Alonso keeps on getting injured. So I think there's an element of that. Of course, big question marks over Iker Casillas, the goalkeeper. I personally don't think it's a big deal. I think Valdés is probably better than him now anyway. Mm-hmm. But that question is starting to sneak into people's minds. Del Bosque would argue, and has argued, that from his first get-together to this get-together, pretty much 50% of the team has changed. It might look like it's the same old people, but it's not. I would counter argue that by saying, yeah, but the starting 11 still looks very much like it was. It's the players around it that are changing.
Right.
Like Michu, for example. He didn't play very well, must be
said. Did he not?
But then again, he's part of that. There's the debate in Spain about who should be up front. Well, part of the debate needs to be framed in terms of who's going to play the worst possible role in the Spain team, because that's the most difficult role of any of them. Because
why?
Number 9 really doesn't have a place in the Spain team. Because it's a player who's completely denied space. So you sort of need the false number 9, but you haven't got Leo Messi. You've got Cesc Fabregas, who I think is very, very good at it.
Right.
But it means that they keep trying these number 9s, and none of them completely convince, although Negredo is starting to. And his stats are brilliant in terms of goals.
So he's denied space because the other team sit back.
Because the other team plays so, so deep. And rather than breaking towards a number 9, Spain effectively allow them to play deep because they go right up to them and then try and find that little angled ball through. And, of course, that little angled ball through suits someone coming from slightly deeper more than it suits the centre-forward. So the centre-forward position in the Spain team almost doesn't exist, which is why so many good forwards, and none of them seem to be that good for Spain, except, at the moment, Negredo.
Let's round out one or two other big Spain questions since you're slumming it with us today.
I'm slumming it.
Yeah.
It's good fun in here.
Yeah, good. Because listeners are eager for info on, for example, here's Safar saying, any truth to this Koke to Man United rumours, and if so, how good is he?
I think he's very good. He's only 21. He's playing all across the midfield for Atletico Madrid.
What, Amy?
Leave me alone.
Sid's being serious.
I know. Well, okay. Go on. No, it's the Cocky.
Because his name is Cocky.
Okay, sorry.
For goodness sake. Anyway.
I made a great joke, what I thought was a great joke in Spanish about Cocky.
Was it about space?
About Cocky, but the Spaniards didn't think it was funny. I thought it was a hilarious bilingual joke.
What was your joke?
We were at the Spain squad, and lots of people were waiting for an interview, and I said to this guy, who are you waiting for? I'm waiting for Cocky. And in Spanish, the word for queue is collar. And he said, no, I'm waiting for Koke. Are there lots of people waiting for Koke? He said, yeah, I think there's 5 or 6 of them. I said, in other words, you're in the Koke collar. And he looked at me like I was a right arse. I think that's quite funny.
That's
personally
about the best bilingual joke that's ever been made.
I don't know about ever.
That's excellent. That's excellent. Spur of the moment. Bingo. That's anyway, is he any good?
Yeah, I think he's brilliant.
Is he going to Barcelona rather than Man United?
No, I think he's staying where he is, at least in the short term. He's only 21. He's come through the club's youth system. He can play across the midfield. He's played at right back for Spain. He's very, very clever. Diego Costa, who's got... whatever it is, 11 goals this year. I think of Diego Costa's last 18 goals, 12 were provided by Koke.
Right.
He's very good indeed.
He's Ozil, is he?
No. Stylistically, not at all. He's clever rather than sort of, you know, technically very gifted, little angled passes, although he can do that. He's dynamic. He reads the game very well. He's always well positioned. He's not like Ozil in terms of, you know, body position, the kind of passes he provides.
All right. Bale, how crook is his back?
Big argument between Madrid and Marca. Madrid, who hadn't admitted any problem with his back, then admitted a problem with his back to deny the fact that the problem was as bad as Marca said. They're saying there's a slight protrusion of one of the intervertebral discs, ooh, which doesn't mean a spinal disc hernia, because a hernia involves a rupturing of that disc, but it is slightly protruding. They say it provokes no pain and he can carry on playing just as any other player would do.
Might be back for the Malaga game.
I suspect that at the very most he'll only play a few minutes against Malaga. They want him fit in time for the Barcelona game, which is the following week.
All right.
The Clásico, Jimbo.
The Clásico. Scouse anti-Madridista. Please tell Sid on Thursday's pod I'm halfway through my signed copy of his excellent book, Brackets Cheers. I'm enjoying it very much. What book is this, Sid?
I didn't come here to plug my book, but while I'm here, as soon as you've asked so kindly, it's my book, Fear and Loathing in La Liga, which is about the history of the rivalry between Madrid and Barcelona.
It's got a fascinating chapter on the Civil War history of both clubs.
It's actually got two chapters on the Civil War.
Did you bring any with you?
I've got one with me. You can have a look. Yeah.
Ooh, I can have a look. Thanks.
Well, you can have a look if Sean will let you. I've got Sean's copy with me.
Adelrami's gone to Milan, and what a mess he's finding there.
What a character he is, by the way, and what a troublemaker, but he's very funny. He once in an interview on Spanish TV explained that his teammates, when he was a kid, used to call him Shrek, and they said, why, you don't look much like Shrek? And he said, no, it's because of this, and then he belched into the camera.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. So is he, you know, if they can sort him out discipline-wise, is he going to do a job for them? Because they're absolutely shocking at the back.
Yeah. I think he's a really good player, and I think he's quite a good footballer, but I think he actually hasn't proven himself to be a good player, and that's the problem. I think it's potentially a disaster waiting to happen, but if they can get him fit and they can get him fast and slim, then I think he'll be a good player. He said that comment, I can't remember if I told you this on the pod, that he complained that Djukic had said to him, I'm going to make you the best centre-back in the world, and then he didn't. And I was like, no, surely that would be, and then you didn't.
Yeah. Bit of a mess in Italy, as we say. The big news there is the fact that there's two huge games coming up this weekend, one of which is Fiorentina Juventus, little bit of a rivalry there, and Montella and Conte, two of the coming fellows. Should be a cracking match that. That I think is Sunday lunchtime. Sunday night though, it's only Roma Napoli, and a game that's been shifted because there's a big demonstration happening on Sunday in the Italian capital. So they're going to play it Friday night. Woof indeed, because Napoli, you know, they sell Cavani, but they're still off to a great start. Scoring loads of goals, only conceding a couple, but as good as they've been, Roma have been streets better, scoring 20, conceding just one, winning all seven of their games so far, and that's going to be a huge game. Napoli's five-man midfield, Hamzic and Signe, all that stuff against Totti and the boys. And
so, Totti's just amazing, isn't he? Yeah. And I say this as someone who doesn't watch enough Italian football to give a really in-depth answer, but it just seems to me it just never, ever stops.
I remember having this argument with Sid in 1999, I think it was. We went to watch Real Madrid Roma, and we were just sat there, and I remember saying, Totti's brilliant, look, and Sid wasn't quite convinced. I think a lot of British people haven't been, but surely his long longevity over the last 15 brilliant. Years is an incredible player.
When he was 16, they brought him on for a friendly against Barcelona. If you remember, he scored an unbelievable volley against them.
When will this be?
This would be like 93 or something like that.
I mean, it's just bonkers.
Yeah.
I was in Rome when they won the last Scudetto.
Oh.
Yeah. And what was, I mean, you know, this is going back to 2001, and the entire city was completely devoted to Totti in that team. and he was still quite a young player, and it just seems amazing that he's still got this still total hold over everybody. Oh, obviously not the Lazio fans.
He's 37. Some people say that their run so far has been easy, although they did destroy Inter up at the San Siro, but this is regarded as obviously the massive test. They're top of the table on 21 points, 7 wins out of 7. Napoli and Juventus both 2 points behind on 19, and then a big drop down to Inter. We'll be doing Inter Sunday night, BT Sport against Torino. Could be goals in that, I think. That's a big week for Inter. We'll talk about that on Sunday, because it's just not time now. They've been taken over by the Indonesians. Anyway, a bit of music, and crikey, it's the Premier League. Pod, I love you, but we've only got 10 minutes to sort out the Premier League. Actually, to be fair, 10 minutes, that's quite enough, isn't it? What are we going to talk about? Man United, Southampton. Ooh, hello. Artur Boric against Wayne Rooney again.
Indeed. And, I mean, who'd have thought at the start of the season it's the big game of the weekend. Southampton are, what, fourth on 14?
Fourth, points. Yeah.
I mean, I think they've been great. And
Man United, where are they? Ninth?
Yeah, Southampton have only conceded 2 goals all season. Uh-huh. I think perhaps we shouldn't get too carried away, given I think at the same point last season, West Brom had 14 points from 7 games too. But they have been incredibly impressive. Sid will know more about Pochettino.
They won at Anfield.
Yeah, indeed. And he'll know more about Pochettino than I will. His pressing game is clearly working, and I've been very impressed with him.
The only thing they're not doing is scoring goals, but maybe if they run hard at Rio, they'll be able to do that as well.
Maybe. And I haven't seen much of Osvaldo yet, but he, in theory, at least gives
scored
them
a great goal for Italy.
Yeah, he in theory gives them that. Another Italian who's not an Italian, the same as the Englishmen who are not English and the Spaniards who aren't Spanish and all the rest of it.
Yeah, but Man United, those two wonder goals from Yanase. But it wasn't the most impressive performance against Sunderland, was it?
No, but I don't know. I think there's still such a work in progress under Moyes, and I think you can go into any game and just not be quite sure how Man United are going to play at the moment.
Right. I quite fancy Southampton for this. Is that wrong?
I think it's interesting that, you know, a few years ago you wouldn't have thought they'd have a chance at Manchester United, but you've got to remember, last season, of course, at this stage, United had already lost twice.
Right.
They were, I think they were 4 points behind Chelsea. And then, of course, they went on this amazing run and ended up winning the league by 11 points.
Mm.
So it is very early to be writing United off, even though they've played, you know, poorly throughout the season.
But also, just, you know, only very recently, the way that they lost at home to West Brom, another team who are capable, Southampton looked like a team who are capable of going and doing a similar-ish job.
Yeah.
Of controlling, trying to control the game, not just trying to get lucky at Old Trafford.
Yeah, and running at their back line, because it just looks there for the taking. Man City, meanwhile, are at West Ham. Can West Ham repeat their extraordinary Spurs success?
Probably not.
Do you not think? No?
No, the Spurs...
City's form away from home is very poor. Stoke, they only just got a draw. They lost at Villa. They lost at Cardiff.
I mean, that Villa game, though, was a freak of nature.
Right.
I mean,
Cardiff and Stoke.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, they're questions to ask, but I think if you looked at that Villa game in isolation, like, if they'd have won that...
Still no Vincent Kompany this weekend, Sean.
Which is a big blow the way that West Ham
Carlton
will play.
Cole is back.
Now you're selling it to me.
Yep.
I've got to put £5 on West Ham.
You're not, though, are you?
What are the odds?
I haven't checked.
So West Ham, no? Really?
They clearly have a chance, but I think the questions are more City, really, because, as you say, they've had a poor start to the season. They want to make themselves serious title contenders. West Ham, it is the sort of place that they should be looking to win, but it does worry me that Kompany's out.
Right. Champions League coming up, and they're off to Moscow. Arsenal, who are going to be playing Dortmund, and Ozil pointed to his knee and stuff. They got 4 games in 9 days. That's crazy. Modern football.
Well, I think once this Norwich game is out the way, and they'll be trying to just get it out the way, then suddenly I think Arsenal's season shifts quite dramatically, because they've got a run coming up with a whole host of much more potentially difficult opponents than they've generally had so far this season.
Luckily,
Dortmund, United, and then
Chelsea, albeit in the League Cup, and then there's games with Liverpool coming up soon.
Well that's the big question with Arsenal. I mean, if you look at their results against the same teams they played last season...
He's going to do the stat!
No, I think it is true.
They've
won them all. So, you know, the question that the teams they played already this season...
The same teams last year, they got 5 more points than they got this year. Or 3, because I've seen both figures.
But
they did better last year.
Yeah, exactly. So let's do that again.
Yeah, but not in a run. I mean, it's a slightly disingenuous stat, isn't it?
Can't argue with the numbers.
But it suggests that, you know, there's a bigger series of games to come, and you,
right.
Yeah, and it also suggests that it's worth calming down a little bit about the start. Basically, that's the fundamental thing.
Right. Although, two words for you, Dr. Sid.
Go on,
Nicholas Bentner. He's back. He is back. There
and
you go.
That's it. That's just it. Ended the world.
Yeah. Norwich. They need a result, don't they? They're down in 18th place. Spent all that money on some flash forwards. It's not happening for them, Amy.
Yeah, not yet. I saw them earlier this season, and they just looked... they were at Tottenham and played really, really poorly and looked like a team that were going in a negative direction. Ooh. And I think there's been quite a lot of pressure there under Houghton. So
yeah.
I think they'll be patient and they'll give him time. I don't think the Norwich board are the type to panic quite yet. But right. They do need to pull themselves together.
Right. In the pot-marked Jeopardy, of course, there's a cracking game coming up on Monday night under the lights at Selhurst Park as Crystal Palace take on Fulham. Ian Holloway, Martin Yole. The winner takes it all. The loser standing small. Sean Ingle.
I mean, Fulham have been really poor this season. If you look at their, not just obviously their points tally, but their sort of shot number of shots on target, their levels of possession and other things, most of their sort of headline stats are way down on last season as well. So obviously they beat Stoke in the last game, which was a good result. You start to think already that if Palace don't put a run together, they could be down before.
Well, apparently,
before
there's word in South London that this could be a crunch match for Ian Holloway,
which is ridiculous because I think, you know, I've written on this before. You know, what clubs should do at the start of each season is have a realistic target on what they're likely to get points wise at the end of the season. I think anyone looking at Palace's points tally would think they're going to be relegated. They've got the worst team in the league. Probably somewhere between 25 and 35 points is realistic. And if Holloway performs those expectations, he should be kept in the job.
All right.
And in any case, there's another question which is broader than just the points, which is that if you're convinced that he's the right man, then you stick with him anyway because you're realistic about the points and also because you analyse the games, not just the results, which can happen for all sorts of reasons. And if you're not convinced he's the right man, you let him go even if they're winning, for example, which happened last year at Southampton.
Absolutely. That's a very interesting point. Of course, they inherited him midway through last season when Dougie Friedman did one up north. They have changed manager, of course, at the stadium of Light Goss Point coming in. This will be his debut with Sunderland as they travel down to Swansea, who are not having the best of times. In fact, here's a fun fact from producer Ben. In 18 Premier League games since they beat Bradford at Wembley, they've only picked up 16 points, which is not very good. Sunderland, still no Fletcher. Yeah. Away at Swansea? Yeah. Amy's making a face. I think that's speaks... You know, it's worth a thousand words.
Thank
Amy.
You, James. Yeah. But I'm looking forward to seeing how Poyet gets on, though.
All right.
I think he did overall, apart from the funny ending, have a great time at Brighton and did pick them up quite radically, quite quickly. So,
but given Sunderland have only got 1 point from seven games, I think it is.
Yep.
They are going to they're going to then have to produce. You know, instead of normally it's a point and a bit, it's good enough to stay up. You know, it's, you know, you're looking to like 1.4 points. Yep. I think it is to actually get closer, 38 to 40 points. I think that's a massive ask given. We know where Sunderland are. You know, they're almost starting the season with seven games less than everyone else. So I think Poyet's got a huge job there. I suspect he's unlikely to get them out of the relegation zone.
Right, Stoke West Brom. Stoke need a win. They lost the last three. Will they get it at home to West Brom? A West Brom team that's suddenly in form. They beat Man United away. They got that point against Arsenal. Sean just pointed at somebody else. As if you don't want to talk about
Stoke West
Brom.
I'm not having this question.
West Brom away win.
There you go. And these are some big games, actually, because you've got Chelsea-Cardiff. What's the mood like in Cardiff now? There were talks, weren't there? There were talks, Amy. You're nodding.
There were talks.
Yeah, and apparently he's been backed. He's been told...
It's not a particularly encouraging situation, is it? And it doesn't augur very well for the long term.
Barry would say, there's gas left in this explosion.
That's a very nice way of putting it, Barry, who's not here.
Right. Okay, Everton are taking on Hull... And Lukaku, crazy.
Oh, well, I think the other thing that's quite interesting with Everton, I think they've won eight of their last nine home games in the league now.
Right.
And they always had a tendency, I always didn't trust them at home against not very good sides, but I think that's actually changing both at the back end of last season and this season. And even though Hull are doing pretty well, I think they've got 11 points from seven, which is decent. Everton so far have been impressive.
They certainly have. Now, what about this? Aston Villa are in the top half of the table. And they're taking on Spurs. Spurs beat Villa 4-0 at Villa Park in December, but Villa have picked up a little bit of form of late, beating City in circumstances we mentioned before, and then they beat Norwich. They only got a draw with Hull, but Benteke might be back. And Spurs, we talk about running at a Man United's back line. Wow, West Ham really uncovered a vulnerability there, didn't they?
Yeah, I think it's probably sometimes an international break comes at either a good or a bad time for a team. Right. And I think it's obviously given some big food for thought for Spurs over this last couple of weeks. They would have had a big, big shock because I don't think there was any anticipation whatsoever that they were going to be on the receiving end of that kind of performance and result against West Ham. So I'd be expecting them to react. And I think they did very well against Villa in the League Cup this year as well, didn't they, just recently, with a fairly strong team, because Villas-Boas doesn't really do sort of reservish teams in the cup competition. So I think Spurs will be all guns blazing.
Newcastle are taking on Liverpool, which is interesting because, you know, what to think of this Liverpool. There they are, only goal scored, keeping them off the top of the table, and revisiting St James's Park, where they won 6-0 back in April. Crikey. Should we be taking them seriously as title candidates, as top four candidates? Is this the game that determines it? And what about Newcastle? Are they coming back now after everyone thought they were in real trouble? So many questions could be answered by this game.
I'm not sure this is the one that's going to define whether or not Liverpool are title contenders.
Well, it is for the next 7 days. No, I mean it. It is.
Why not take them seriously? As
it's a test. This will they pass it? I guess that's what I'm asking.
I think they've every chance of passing it. I think particularly the way their forward line is working, and the Suarez coming back. Obviously is having a massive impact, and they were playing well enough without him, so why wouldn't they keep this going?
All right, well, Newcastle, despite their better form, which is largely characterised by that 2-1 win at Cardiff, are still only 3 points off the drop, as are Man United for that matter. So it's going to be a tense game, this one.
It is.
Thanks, Sean. What about Suarez? Because there was a lot of talk that Liverpool, according to the Spanish press, Liverpool have now intimated to Spanish clubs, or to Real Madrid in particular, that he is buyable for €60 million. Is that right?
Yeah, Real Madrid are saying that they won't try and buy anyone in the winter window.
Right.
Mind you, Real Madrid are not always entirely truthful about things like this, or indeed about lots of other things. But I think it makes sense for everybody, really, for him not to go until the end of the season now.
Right, okay.
I think he always was buyable for around about €60 million.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Tell you what's buyable for a lot less than that is your book, Sid. And it's
a bargain at the price that it's at.
You're going to be signing copies of it on Friday, are you?
Yeah, actually, yeah, quite beyond the plugging of me. It's worth plugging the event itself, because there's some brilliant people there. So it's a London Sports Writing Festival at Lords.
Yeah.
There's lots and lots of events. There's a big event about Arsenal, for example. Neil Warnock's there, although my sister will kill me for saying brilliant people and then mentioning Neil Warnock soon afterwards. She's a Wednesday fan. You've got a couple of really nice cycling events. Yeah, there's the Blizzard event with Jonathan and Philippe Auclair and Gab Marcotti. I'm there with Graham Hunter, which is bound to be entertaining because of Graham. Guillaume Balague's there because he's got a book coming out on Leo Messi. I think it's going to be a really, really good event.
Cool. That's Friday.
Clark Carlisle's going to be there as well. It's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and I think there's events on Sunday as well.
Wow.
At Lords. Tasty.
Wow. When you consider that the Frieze Art Fair is just down the road, artistically speaking.
And so is Abbey Road just down the road.
Abbey Road's close.
Which is hilarious. Presumably you've been to Abbey Road.
Oh, yeah.
It's impossible for cars to get past.
Yeah,
furious.
It's not even the right zebra crossing.
Apparently not. Someone told me that last time.
The one
there
on the cover doesn't exist anymore. Of course, it was all a photo montage because Paul McCartney's got bare feet. Didn't you know that?
I didn't know. It was
a because they couldn't. They weren't talking to each other by this. But this is very much the end of days, vis-a-vis the Beatles. Supposedly, if you look at the cover of Abbey Road, which is for me my favourite. Well, it's half my favourite Beatles album, but we're getting into another area here. He's not wearing any shoes, and everybody else is, as they stride across this zebra crossing, which unbelievably has been painted over by the council. What were they thinking?
Is that a statement? Not the painting it over, but the fact that he's wearing no shoes.
He isn't wearing any shoes.
And that's a statement, is it?
Because at the time there was a suggestion that he was actually dead. A fact that was gleaned by playing Eye on the Walrus, the out-track backwards at a certain speed. You could get the message, Paul McCartney's dead. Anyway,
I have no idea what's going on there.
It's true to say that they weren't best of friends at this point. And the suggestion is that they didn't actually get together for the... In much the same way
which
that...
Which year is Abbey Road, then?
What, 70... When did they split up? Was it 72, 73?
I thought
4-7-1. I don't know. But of course, it's also significant that in the video for Ebony and Ivory, Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder filmed their bits separately.
Did they?
Amy, you've got a plane to catch. Where are you off to?
I'm going to Amsterdam.
Why are you doing that, dear?
I'm going to see Dennis Bergkamp.
Are you?
Oh, brilliant.
I am, yeah.
Super.
Talking of books,
I bet, yeah, his book's supposed to be brilliant as well. I've not had a chance to read it yet.
It's a really, really good read. It's the genre of football autobiographies being what it is. It's quite original, and I quite like the way
that may well be David Winner's touch, mightn't it?
Because I think it's a combination of that, but it's cleverly written, but also it's the original thinking of a guy like Bergkamp, who isn't quite your ordinary footballer, and the way he analyses the game. It's a really good read.
What's the best sports autobiography you've ever read, then?
Oh, I don't know. I can't. Well,
Adams and Merson are both good for non-footballing reasons. They're both very interesting. Adams is in particular.
My favourite football book was The Miracle of Castel Di Sangro, which you might remember.
By Joe McGuinness.
There you go. Which was a great book.
Crazy. Anyway, that is it. We could have gone on all day.
We have gone on all day.
Many thanks, Sid, for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
And good luck with your book and that.
Thank you.
Many thanks, Sean, for joining us today. Producer Ben, Amy Lawrence.
Don't you just want to say thanks to the woman?
No, I didn't. No, when I said the woman, I didn't mean the woman.
Pipe down there.
What I mean is that for whatever reason, you're the only woman who comes along.
You know, I accept that.
Yeah. Bye.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag-and-drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.